on this week's Nonsensible Podcast.
You guys are laughing, but people have literally been like, oh crap, there's cat hair on my food. And it's because there's constantly cat hair in the air.
She was like a crazy cat lately.
Not a cat. It was a pet rat. The whole time, she just sat in a chair next, like, watching us.
This is Nonsensible.
Yeah, back with another episode of the, with myself, Sam.
And Dave.
Yeah.
I'm eating, sorry. Hold on. Give me a second.
Oh, no. We've got all the time in the world. Actually, we don't. So just go ahead. Just talk with your mouth full. People understand.
Thanks for joining us today, guys. You can catch us on Dive Studios on IG and Twitter, the Dive Studios, youtube.com/Dive Studios. Also, leave a review on our podcast on Apple Music and Spotify. And not Melon, no. And Sam, take it away.
No, actually enjoying you do this with your mouth full. How old are you, Alexa? Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry, you're getting mouth full. So everyone's getting their mouth full at the moment.
She's okay. Of age, I'm sure. Mm-hmm.
23. Okay. Yeah, on that note, we do have two guests joining us today. We have Alexa and Marshall, both who joined us last time, and we're lucky to have them back with us again today.
Quick introduction.
Hello, my name is Marshall. I do music, based in Korea, but also the world.
For a minute there, I thought you were going to say, hello, I'm Marshall, and I do spoken books.
You know what? I've actually done like different audio recording stuff for like a children's, like I had to do voices. I had to do a whole like Winnie the Pooh like series. It was fun.
Interesting. Cool. Yeah.
It sounded good.
Thank you so much.
No pressure, Alexa.
Hello. Hey, yes. ASMR. No. Still swallowing. There's still stuff in my teeth. Anyways, I just had a granola bar. Hi, my name is Alexa. I'm also an artist based in Korea. I recently made my comeback with my song Do or Die in March. The physical album is on sale, by the way. So if you want to buy that, then you can buy that. But no pressure. And physical. I also have merch on Interpark. But
nice.
Physical albums.
Ooh, do we get a signed copy?
I got one.
You have one.
Yeah, I got a signed copy.
Look at you. How's life been treating everyone?
Pretty good. Been busy. Been happy.
Dodging the COVID.
We're pretty safe and healthy, yeah.
I've just been inside for like the past month and a half. And just recently, like this is one of the few times, I can count on one hand that I've been like outside.
Really?
How's life, you know, with self-quarantine? How are you holding up?
It's okay. Thankfully, I have like roommates.
You're self-quarantined?
No. I mean, I was when I came back from London. I was quarantined for about 2 weeks 14 days.
So you have roommates, so.
Yeah, but I have roommates. And so it was good to, like, I've never really lived alone. I've always had, like, roommates or someone, like, in the house.
Do you not like to live alone?
I don't know. I'm okay. I think I'll be okay with it now. But I don't know. It's always, like, even though you don't necessarily need to talk to them all the time, just to have that presence there in the room kind of keeps me, like, at bay.
So you don't like
What it is. Sanity,
as well.
I think, at the moment, like everyone I talk to, they're having mental issues to some extent,
especially in these times.
Yeah,
like you, it's I don't know, unless you have like pets, which I my roommates,
but it's scary and lonely if you don't have someone you're living with. So, yeah, you know, what having someone else to bounce conversation off.
What about you, Alexa? Do you prefer to be, you know, around people at all times, or do you like more personal space? Do you like to be alone?
That's the thing. See, I am what I like to call myself a selection? Selectional, is that a word? No.
Selective extrovert.
Good morning. I can speak English. selective extrovert, because I really do love people.
Yeah.
Like if I can see people, I want to see people. But sometimes at the end of the day, I'm like, okay, I don't want to go out. I just want to have time to absorb the day, get through my thoughts and everything. So, I mean, I'm kind of both, honestly. I'm like right in the middle.
For sure. I've had like a lot of introvert friends of mine who are like, Marshall, I want to actually see people. I want to go out. And it's me. And I'm like, yeah, like you hate people. You hate going out. You love being alone and being by yourself. That's like me. This is the perfect time. They're like, yeah, but it's been, and they're in the States, and so they've been on lockdown for at least a month. So they're like, but, you know, it's been over a month now, and I think we're going stir crazy. Yeah, I don't know.
What about you, Sam? Before you were married, did you enjoy being alone? Did you enjoy alone time, or did you, I think you've always, you're very social.
I'm a selective introvert. Like, I grew up as an only child. Mm-hmm. My parents got divorced when I was young, so mum was at work, like, 9 till 6. So I had a lot of time by myself, used to grow up and just, you know, entertain myself. And so I have no problems being alone. And sometimes I just want that alone time. Mm-hmm. If it's just going to a coffee shop and having a book and not having anyone interrupt me. But yeah, socially as well. Like when I was, before I was married, I was out most nights of the week.
Yeah, yeah, I know that about you. Sam likes social gatherings. Every time there was like an event or somebody's birthday or some sort of, like, I don't know, like a rooftop party, Sam would always be there, you know? And people usually, sometimes I've seen people surprised, like, oh, crap, that's Sam. What's he doing here? Mm-hmm. But Sam just loves, you know, social gatherings. Yeah. I noticed that about you.
And now, not so much.
Well, yeah, I mean, but yeah.
Maybe that's because I'm getting
older. You're also busy, too. You have kids. You know, you can't.
That's it's the not excuse like back- I give people. But more often than not, I'm sitting at home by myself watching TV. The kids are in bed. I'm like, I feel like I'm busy. I'm looking after the kids. I don't tell them they're in bed. I can't be bothered going out.
Right. I feel like I've felt that way because of being in Korea. Like I've become more of an introvert while being here.
It's a very social country. It really is. I don't think I've ever felt this surrounded by people before in my life until I moved here. So it's like you always feel like you're kind of surrounded.
Especially at crazy times too. Like and you know, even like in the AMs, people will hit you up, like, what are you up to?
Exactly. Yeah. Like 5 in the morning.
Yeah. I think I out socialized myself too early. You know, out most nights of the week. Sometimes getting home after lunch time. I've done that multiple times. And it's just like, yeah, if you've done that a few times, by the time you're hitting, you know, your mid 30s, you're like, I'm done with it. I don't need it anymore.
How about yourself, Dan?
For me, I like being with people, but you have to come to me.
Oh.
Sam and Marshall should know that pretty well. I don't need to leave my house. I can go months, I can go a year without leaving my house. Mm-hmm. It's not that I'm an introvert, more so than I don't like to leave my personal, my comfortable space. So if people are like, I'll go over, I'm always welcoming people to come to my house.
Yeah.
You know, you hang out with me and my cats, play some video
so
games.
So many cats.
Yeah, so many cats.
So many cats.
So more for me than avoiding people and needing alone time, I need my space. I need my personal space. You guys have been to my house. I built like a kingdom. It's an arcade.
Yeah.
You've been there too,
Alexa,
for filming. It's an arcade. It's a studio. It's a internet cafe.
I wanna play
everything's
that.
There. You know, I'll order.
It's a cat cafe as
it's
well.
It's a cat cafe as well.
It absolutely is.
You're like, you bring a cup of coffee over and you have a sip and you're hang on. oh, cat hair. Oh.
You guys are laughing, but people have literally been like, oh, crap, there's cat hair on my food. And it's because there's constantly cat hair in the air.
Yeah.
The other day you were saying he's got allergy medicine at the front door as soon as you walk in.
Yeah. Literally prepare for people who have allergies.
I think I tick some too because I'm allergic to cats.
Cool though, that was a good warm up for the darker topics we'll probably get into today.
Let's jump in, shall we? Let's give the jar to Marshall because Alexa had a go last time, so it's only fair that we share it around. It's kind of like they're like fortune cookies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's fun grabbing a new one.
Oh, okay. Tell us about the worst apartment you ever lived in.
What are you giggling, little schoolgirl?
Hang on. Is this a woo story?
Yeah.
Okay. Take it away then.
Oh, okay. So there is a point in my life in the midway, like I've been in Korea for a few years, and Wu is this other person that was a guest on this show not too long ago. He and I were roommates at one point, and I needed a place to live, and so I was like, oh, you know, is there any way? And so he's like, yeah, sure. So we lived together for a bit, but there's this one apartment that we were at just for like a few months before moving to like another place. But that apartment was literally It was like some Cold War era like apartment from like the 60s. And it was super run down, and the water, it was just, the toilet seat wouldn't like stay up and stuff. Oh, like it was one of those like, yeah. It was just one of those like old wreck run down apartments. Right. But it was, you know, it had character. And we definitely like filmed several videos, Wu and I, like during that time of like us being ridiculous and just like laughing our heads off. So I think this is more of a personal, like in my brain, it's a lot more funnier. But as I'm explaining it right now, I'm like, this is the worst story ever.
Yeah, we've all got those stories.
Visualize it except for me.
We've all got those stories.
Yeah.
I, in terms of apartments, the worst one that I was actually on the lease for, we actually had to take the landlord to court and sue her.
Oh, my.
Because we said we're leaving, and she's like, you never told me that. And then we're like, black mold on the wall. And my wife was pregnant at the time, so that wasn't much fun. But I stayed at a friend's house for once for a while when I was here in Korea. I was on my holidays. Vacation kind of between university, and he's like, stay in my, I've got a room you can stay in. And he was living on the top floor of where his parents lived, and I'm like, cool, you know, I don't have to pay rent, and I've got a place to stay to crash. And it was in Hongdae area, so it was kind of like, you know, hopping, and I had places to go out and party at the time. But for some reason that winter was incredibly cold, and I don't think the heating worked very well because the toilet bowl used to freeze.
Ooh, that's rough.
Yeah. And it used to get so cold that what we drink bottles of Gatorade primarily because the way the bottle is made, it has quite a large neck to it as opposed to some of the smaller ones. And when we'd come back the next day, there'd be lines of Gatorade bottles that were half filled with yellow liquid.
Oh, no.
Because it was so cold that we couldn't really be bothered going out to the toilet, frozen toilet.
Yuck.
And then there was a time when a rat climbed out of the roof and ran across the floor.
Fun.
Yeah. So that was kind of weird.
I think I have a better story now. Let me try and... So, okay, context-wise, I was on tour in the U.S., not for music. I was working for this, like, nonprofit organization, and we were trying to end child soldiering in Eastern Africa. And we all got into, like, teams of four. This organization put us into teams of four, and we had to tour the U.S., book our own, like, documentary screenings and fundraise money.
Oh, wow.
And we also had to book our own housing as well. So we stayed on a lot of like dorm room floors, people's houses, apartments, guest rooms at churches, mosques. We stayed at a mansion once in Atlanta. Yeah. That was really fun. But this one time we were in somewhere in like the middle of Florida.
Florida.
And, I don't remember what place it was, but we ended up staying at this person who booked the screening for us at her college.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, oh, you know, if you guys need a place to stay, you guys can stay with us. And so when we got to her place, it was like a little, it was like a little house. Her parents had like gone to bed because we rolled in like super late around like 11 p.m. at night. And we got there and she had this air bed, like air mattress thing out for us in the middle, a big one. And then she had this like snacks laid out for us, but it looked like it was out there for like hours. Like the she had like nacho cheese and like, but the cheese had like congealed into like a gelatinous like mess. And she was like, and she was a lot different from what we had imagined her to look like.
Mm-hmm.
And
she was like a crazy cat lady.
She, no, not a cat. It was a pet rat.
Ooh.
And so she was just, and the
she
whole
brought it
night,
out.
Sit on her shoulder by any chance?
So okay, so it was right. It was late at night, right? And so we wanted to go to bed because we had to wake up early the next morning. And the whole time, she just sat in a chair next, like watching us, petting her pet rat, and just like watching us,
watching you guys sleep.
And we're just like getting ready for bed, and we're like,
some creepy silence of a man.
And so we ended up like, oh, I think we have to like go somewhere. And we ended up like making an excuse to like leave
early.
And we went to like the nearest like Walmart and slept in the parking lot in our 16-passenger van.
Wow.
Because we were like, this is not something we want to risk. Yeah.
That's creepy.
Yeah.
That's creepy.
We met a lot of interesting people on the road. It was like a 10-week tour, but.
That sounds like something out of American Horror Story.
Yeah.
Some, I mean, there's some fun stories there. Oh, so many gas station stories. But anywho.
What about you, Alexa? You ever had any interesting residences that you...
Non-conforming residences that you didn't enjoy living in.
Let me think on that.
I don't have any. That's why I asked you. I actually don't have any. I've had like small like one rooms and stuff. Mm-hmm. I can't really complain about that. I'm just it's too small for me. That's who I think I am. Like just, it didn't fit my size.
My tall body.
So
no, I mean, I don't think I've ever had any because I just lived at home with my folks, and then Korea, I lived in two apartments now, but like. Even stuff with like hotel experiences, I don't think I've ever had any like weird bad things other than like loud neighbors and you can hear everything, and I mean everything.
Other than that, this person's having a good time.
Actually, yeah, exactly.
When you talk about neighbors, that reminds me, I lived in Haebangchon for about 8 to 10 years, and the floor below us, one night I kept hearing this weird noise like. And then you'd hear like this rustle of like metallic items. And be like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And there's this waft of smoke that keeps coming upstairs. And I'm like, I'm a non-smoker. And it annoyed me to death because it was through my bedroom window that was open because it was summertime and I wanted to get a breeze in.
Yeah.
So I decided to get up and try and work out what was going on downstairs. And obviously I couldn't angle my head down to see what's happening, but I could see the reflection from the building across the way and back down into the window. And what was happening is people were playing this really serious game of ghost stop, like, you know, the Korean card game.
Oh, yeah. That was what the sound was?
Yeah, but what they were doing was it was an illegal gambling den.
Oh.
Like, it was 24 hours a day.
Oh, wow.
Like, And you'd go down there and knock on the door and they'd be like, shh, everyone would get really quiet. And they're like, yeah, can I help you? I'm just like, oh, no, I was just seeing everything's okay. And as if nothing was going on, and people would come backwards and forwards. And this happened for a few weeks. And I started calling the police like every night. I'm like, there's something happening downstairs. You might need to ring the doorbell and check. And the cops came around like 3 or 4 nights in a row. And then like 2 days later, they were gone.
Good for you, though. Good for you taking action. Yeah. There's some people who are non-confrontational that would probably deal with that.
Mm-hmm. In a different way. Yeah. They just like grin and bear it. Or they move.
Speaking of which, my neighbors right now, they have this fucking dog. And it just barks all the time.
You know what it is? Because they're not home.
Is there a law against that? They have this big dog, like huge dog. It's just all hours of the fucking day.
What you need to do.
What do I do about that?
Here's exactly what you do. You get a piece of paper and a pen and you write down 11:15 a.m. dog barks incessantly. 11:17 a.m. dog barks again. Like, you keep a log of how often it barks, and then you can probably take it to somewhere and maybe record the dog barking and take that to like the council.
It's right next to my house too. I don't know what to do about that. It barks every time somebody passes by the house. It barks.
But you don't have a neighbor on your floor.
It's not my physical like neighbor on my building. Like the building next to the juttaek. It's like this dog that's always outside, and it just anytime somebody passes by, so to the point where I don't like. Is that legal? It's just always barking.
Well, you can't go and talk to the dog and say, I'm sorry, you've been breaking the law.
Yeah. What's up with that?
There has to, like, in terms of noise complaints, there are certain hours within which you have to kind of maintain a normal level of noise. So if it's outside of that, you could do something about that. There are a lot of apps now where you can report people to the council.
Really?
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
Especially for illegal parking. It's an app, you take a photo and send it to them.
Right.
So annoying.
Do people write strongly worded letters?
Yeah. Probably. Yeah. I've had strongly worded letters
written to you.
Yeah. But I usually, it's usually like, please stop filming at 1 a.m. I'm trying to sleep, and I'll be like, oh, I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
I've actually physically gone down to my neighbor and apologized.
Yeah.
Like, sorry, you're right.
Yeah, here's a plate of cookies. Enjoy.
I don't know how well it works. I've tried that on people who have parked illegally. Put like a, I got a big piece of cardboard and said, you know, you shouldn't be parking here. You're parked in front of my doorway. But then it snowed and that piece of paper got covered in snow. So I don't even know if they read it. It's kind of like, yeah. It nowadays with people parking inconveniently, you just call their number and you ask them to come out. Strong worded letters. That's you something to consider, Dave.
Something.
Make a video about it.
Strong worded letters? No, you make a video on that. All right,
the dog's not keeping me awake at night.
Let's move on.
Representation.
All right, so today's topic is representation. As entertainments who represent sides to more than one culture, what responsibility do you feel about making sure the audience gets someone to look up to but still maintaining your own unique identity? I know it's kind of a heavy topic to just dump on you guys, but if you guys need like a second to think.
There's a lot of those instances too.
Mm-hmm,
like
a lot.
They'll have straight actor or heterosexual actors who
play gay
trans women or gay role, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I think maybe back in the day there weren't many people out there who were willing to like
come out
and who were openly. But nowadays, you know, with shows like Pose and like, you know, there's so many different shows now who are like pushing the envelope and you know, they have the largest like trans cast ever in life. And that show is doing really well. You know, it's, I think we're moving forward slowly but surely, little by little. Very, very, very small, tiny steps. Even like, you know, Asian Americans getting, or Asians in the Western,
media.
Asians who live in the Western diaspora, who are like, you know, slowly getting the spotlight, you know, with Crazy Rich Asians or, you know, Fresh Off the Boat or, you know, Dr. Ken. You know, there's a couple, not as nearly as much as we would like, but having that representation in media is, I think, so hugely important because we, as a whole, there's so many different sides to us. There's so many different, you know, there's so many different kinds of Asians as well. It's not just Chinese or Korean or Japanese or Cambodian or whatever. There's so many with their own distinct culture and color. And we're just barely scratching the surface now in Western media. I mean, Asia has been doing it for a while.
Yeah.
You know, Hong Kong cinema, K-dramas, blah, blah, blah. But.
All right, devil's advocate here.
Here we go.
You talked about straight people playing...
Where's my towel?
Okay, here's the thing. Okay, you can't... I don't think you can play another race. But in terms of sexuality, where is your stance on someone playing a sexual preference that they don't personally have?
Right.
Because when you look at actors in general and you look at performances that we don't all agree on, but a lot of people tend to consider amazing performances, people who have played a character outside of what their norm is, whether it's Dustin Hoffman in Rain Man, whether it's Tom Hanks in Philadelphia. These are not who they are in real life, but they're portraying a role as an actor.
I agree.
So when it comes to sexuality, what's your stance on that?
Yeah, totally. Again, I think this, a lot of it, my take is that was back then. So like in the 70s and the 80s, early 90s, even up till the 2000s, there weren't actors who are out and openly, you know, especially because of the time and the culture. Now, in the year 2020, there's a lot more talent who are out there open, who are wanting these roles that I think should at least have the chance to audition and be seriously considered for these roles.
Right.
I think a lot of times some of these actors and actresses, when they play a same-sex role, they somehow get, you know, all these awards and it's like this like hugely like lauded thing. Which again, I'm not shitting on their talent or their ability to act, because there are there are certain actors who have really conveyed that emotion in an incredible way, and you know, and vice versa. You know, like when gay actors play straight roles, yeah, of course. But again, I feel like there's a responsibility for people in the industry to actually have these stories be portrayed by the people who've lived them and then who are aware of this life, you know. Of course, it is an art, and that's all, like, it's very, you know, it's very gray in a way.
So do you think skill as an actor versus authenticity, what do you think is more important?
I think authenticity and skill. I mean, you can have both. Yeah, I don't think it has to be one or the other.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, but for example, I don't know if you guys used to watch Modern Family.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a prominent gay couple, Cam and Mitchell, and Cam
is played by a straight actor.
Yeah, he's a straight actor, but he does an incredible job with the character. Yeah. I love his character. But,
right.
But I mean, for example, I can't see anybody else in that role because I'm so used to seeing him.
He killed it. Yeah. So again, I don't think it goes for all. There's just not many roles in general.
But I think also Marshall's argument is part of it is having someone for the community that people can look up to in terms of performing on the big screen.
Yeah.
And instead of having someone that we all know is straight, have someone that is openly gay performing in that role.
Who is incredible. Like, let's not forget. They have to be fucking incredible. Mm-hmm. If they're not great, then obviously that's a no-no for me. But there are great actors and actresses who are in that community who can definitely convey the story in the right way. Mm-hmm. But in terms of sexuality, I think it's a little bit slightly more open, just because I think it's starting to get more traction with people coming out. Mm-hmm. But in terms of actors of color, actresses of color, who they should definitely be playing those roles that are written for them.
Let's jump into Korea for a second. Sure. Okay. Sam is part of, I guess, first generation of Western entertainers in Korea. I mean, I guess the first generation you can consider people in the 90s, you know. There's some people that go way back.
Mm-hmm. Well, wasn't that French?
Ida Doshi.
Yeah. There's people who go like way back who are kind of like, you know, they're not in the industry anymore. They might be, but I'm not sure. But Sam is one of the first prominent figures in
especially in comedy, right?
It's comedy that blew up in Korea, and he became super mainstream.
And still is.
That's what's incredible, Sam. He's maintained his career for so long. So as a foreigner in Korea who made it in the Korean entertainment industry, as a speaker of Korean, and me being somebody who followed in your footsteps years later, do you have any experience or things you want to tell people? Because I'm sure you get messages a lot. I've got these messages a lot in my DMs and stuff. One day I want to become a blah, blah, blah in Korea. What do I have to do to do that? And I don't want to be like, yo, you can't ever do it, because you never know. You never know. I mean, if they bring something new to the table, which is hard to, but if you bring something new to the table, you got a chance.
Yeah.
So as one of the prominent figures in that industry, what do you think is, you know, what do you think you represent as a individual in this industry?
I guess for me, and I kind of equate it to this, there are people that actually open the door for people for people like me to be able to do it. What I think I'm trying to do is pave the way to make it easier for other people to kind of get in.
Okay.
It's not easy, and it's like any industry in the world. I think in the entertainment industry, they're all incredibly difficult. But when you start doing it in a foreign language, and people hit me up all the time. They're like, I want to be on TV. And I'm like, that's great, but it's not as easy as you think it is.
I made a video on that yesterday.
Know, I'm like, yeah, I know. And you know, some people have it, some people don't. There's so many things you have to do. But it is difficult because I'm not Korean, but I'm working in an industry that caters towards the Korean audience. So you have to maintain a level where you're being true to yourself, but it also has to be something that Koreans can understand, and they need to enjoy it at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Otherwise, there's no point going out and doing what you do. And I think Dave did a video about it recently saying how he felt really uncomfortable having to play certain roles, and there were expectations of what he should be doing on television and what people wanted to hear. And I think we've all experienced that to some extent. But then I got to a stage in my life where I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to say what I want to say. And if people don't like it, they're not going to like it. But if people agree with it, they're going to agree with it. And that's just who I am. And I think you look at Korean audiences now, and they've become a lot more accepting than what they used to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's about that fine line. I need to do things that aren't going to be completely cringy and will embarrass me as an Australian. And that can be hard, but
kimchi's so good. I love Korea. Yay! Like that's 10 years ago, that was the standard. Yeah. Sam knows that was the standard at the time because Koreans weren't that used to seeing foreigners who spoke Korean on TV.
Yeah.
So Koreans wanted to feel as though Western people could appreciate their culture as well. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And actually Koreans are a little bit more desensitized to that now. But at the time, what was that like to have to, you know, I wouldn't say you did anything that was like, you know, difficult in terms of, you know, showing your love for Korea. But I'm sure at some point you were like, okay, I'm kind of getting tired of.
I don't know. I think it was just kind of in the initial stages of like starting out in the profession. You know, after a while, I just stopped doing it. And like, even now, if there's things I don't want to do, I'll just say, I don't want to do that. Or I just don't do it. And you can work around it. You have to maintain dignity.
Yeah.
You got to maintain personal dignity. If you're not comfortable doing it, and I don't care who it is, who you are, you have to stand up and say, I'm not comfortable doing this.
Yeah.
Or you just don't do it. And there may be consequences, but you have to be able to live with that. It's not worth selling your soul to the devil.
Right.
To do something that you're uncomfortable doing just for the sake of doing it. And that's what you want to do. You know, I enjoy what I do for a job, but I also have to go home and sleep comfortably at night. And if I start saying to myself, I can't do this, if I'm losing sleep over it, I'm just going to say, I'm not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You should, I don't think anyone should do that for the sake of, you know, improving their employment opportunities.
Yeah. I think that's the part is like, oh, I need to like pay the bills and make money.
Yeah, but exactly.
Like, they want me to play a certain character. It's in, especially in my lane, they want me to be like super flamboyant or like, oh my God, you know, just be a character. And,
I think
offense to people who are that way, like naturally, that's totally fine. But this is how I speak. This is how I am. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't feel like I don't need to overdo a caricature of myself. And along with like, you know, people who are non-Korean as well, because they expect you, I don't know about anymore, well, but I'm sure there's still elements of that now.
It's, I guess we talk about people saying, oh, they've sold out. They're a sellout.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially with musicians, they've done a certain genre of music and the fans expect it of them, but then they've flipped it and they've become commercially successful. But at the end of the day, okay, people are doing this because they enjoy the art form, but also people want to make a living out of it.
Mm.
So selling out for me is not something that we should be looking down upon. If you can be successful in your chosen career, we should be applauding that, not saying, oh, you're a sellout.
Yeah.
Hey, props to you because you're making money out of it and you can buy a house and buy the nice car. But even when you do that, you have to be able to look inside and say, I'm comfortable doing it to this level. If you're not, at the end of the day, is all the fame in the world and all the money in the world really worth personal discomfort?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you have to consider.
Ooh, that's deep.
On that note with Alexa, stay on the same subject. I know that before you broke out into your career, before you went to produce and everything, you were doing K-pop dance covers.
I was a cover artist.
And stuff like that. And I noticed that I noticed some comments on my YouTube, like I've been watching Alexa since she was just, you know, doing covers and stuff like that. And some people are like, oh, I saw a hate comment, maybe a critical comment that was like, oh, she was just some Korea blah, 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 blah before.
Right.
And, you know, as somebody who was a K-pop fan initially and broke out into the industry, do you have any, you know, experiences or words on that?
Like on the same topic of like having to do things we're not necessarily comfortable with?
Well, not so much more than you represented a certain demographic that, of course, there's so many K-pop fans that look at K-pop like, oh, I want to be in the K-pop industry. I want to be part of that. But, you know, to some extent, you got the opportunity to jump on the industry itself. And that was a dream for so many people. You know, as a representative of the very few that are able to get into the industry, can you tell us about some of the experiences you've had?
I mean, you know, when K-pop wasn't super known, nobody really took an interest in like what the training life was like.
Yeah.
But nowadays, like anytime somewhere wants to do a documentary on K-pop artists, they always try to focus on, oh, how brutal and grueling the training is. It's really no different than how it is anywhere else when you're wanting to make an artist, honestly. Mm-hmm. Hours of training go in, hours of whatever fields of practice you need to have as an artist go in. It's really no different. So it's kind of interesting to me how things kind of like devil washed. But like, honestly, you know, things are difficult. Nothing's ever going to be easy. If you want to pursue the path you want, you need to put in a lot of hard work, blood, sweat, and tears, and sleepless nights. But in, at the end of the day, the negatives don't matter. Like, seeing the outcome and seeing like everything come to fruition and people liking what you do and like knowing that the staff has worked so hard to make these things, that's what like brings you happiness at the end of the day. Like, you know, yeah.
In 2008, would you have even dreamed of you being in Korea pursuing a path in music?
I don't think the idea of this ever popped into my head until maybe like 2010s-ish. But like, I mean, I loved K-pop in 2008, but I don't think I ever would have been able to say to myself, when I was like 13, be like, hey, you're going to do this later. I don't think I ever would have been able to process that thought.
But I think, yeah, I was going to say probably all of us are probably in the same boat.
Yeah,
in Korea? What?
Yeah, no way. This was never. Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You had this planned out since the day that you turned six?
No, not the day since I turned six, but the idea of when I got to Korea, I knew that I would do something in the entertainment industry. Oh, I was aware that, if you don't mind, I can go into a little bit.
Please.
When I started learning Korean, I realized that I learned Korean exceptionally fast compared to a lot of foreigners. Mm. And when I was in like Surujari, like when I was drinking with my friends, I knew I was a little bit funnier. And I've always been a little bit creative when it comes to, I guess, music-wise or drawing and stuff. Like, I've always been a little bit creative. So I thought that, you know, I said in a recent video that I used to watch Sammy be like, I could do that too. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize that I couldn't do it on TV. Mm-hmm. But I've always known that I could be funny in Korean or be creative in Korean. So I knew to some extent that I would do something that wasn't, you know, normal in the Korean industry. Mm-hmm. I always thought I would be able to do that.
What was your journey into, like, why did you start learning Korean?
There was no reason. I was in Korea, so I thought. I came visiting with a friend, and I was in Korea, so I was like, might as well learn a language while I'm here.
So Korea was random, too.
You were just here on vacation.
Yeah, I grew up in Koreatown, and my high school was 40% Korean, and my friend was like, yo, dude, I'm going to Korea. You want to go? Like, dude, let's go together, dude. There's, like, internet cafes and shit. I'm like,
you got me now.
I was 20, like, just turned 20, and I couldn't drink legally, but he's like, dude, the legal age for drinking is like super low over there, dude, so we can just get wasted. I'm like, oh, dude.
Did he talk like that?
Yeah, well, dude, I used to actually talk like that.
Sounded like he's from California.
I mean,
maybe from like Orange County, even.
I don't know. That's how I talked. I used to hang out with a lot of, you know, like rock kids and shit. So,
yeah.
So well, I was like, dude, that sounds kind of cool. So I came to Korea, and, you know, it was pretty easy for me to learn language compared to other stuff. So
it's amazing.
Yeah. Wow. And things worked out for you.
Yeah, to some extent. Like I told you, my initial dream was to be the next Sam Hemington. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, this guy was my role model at first.
You're like the YouTube, you have Sam Hemington of YouTube now.
Well, I realized that's not the case because Sam has this natural thing where he gets in front of camera, and especially with Korean TV, he knows how to boom, 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 boom. Like just knows what to say, what to do. Point. He doesn't think twice. He's not like, is this the right time? He just does it, you know? Mm. Whereas I have to like plan things out. That's why I'm good at videos. So I realized over time I couldn't be Sam Hemington. And only Sam Hemington could be Sam Hemington.
Yeah. Wow.
On that note, you've got the room is giving us a round of applause. Where do you take it from there? I think that's like...
Yeah. That's how we end it.
Wow.
And only Marsh can be Marshall and only Alexa can be Alexa.
And Dave can be Dave. Dave.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
All right. That's all the time we got for today. Close us out, Sam.
All right. Don't forget to subscribe to us. You can find us on Apple Music and also on Spotify. And send us give us a review. IG and Twitter, The Dive Studios, YouTube.com, Dive Studios. I want to thank both Alexa and Marshall for joining us yet again. Great having you guys on, and are always welcome back to join us again.
Yeah, it'd be great. We'd love to come
thanks
back.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, guys.
Bye, guys.
See ya.
Bye. See ya.